This is very important to me, and I appreciate your indulgence. Ladies and gentlemen, I think many of you know I follow the events in the Middle East very closely. And for the past month or 6 weeks, there has been a tremendous battle underway in Syria. It has been to secure the a massive area called the East Ghouta, which is a sprawling suburb of Damascus. It will probably be the second largest battle that has occurred during that war. The Syrian army unexpectedly rolled over a great deal of East Ghouta, and to the dismay of Jaish al-Islam, which is the group that holds the area, they rolled through. They captured a major chemical laboratory, and then continued on. And finally, they got to the point where they have one neighborhood called Douma, which is still partially held by Jaish al-Islam. Let me tell you who Jaish al-Islam is. There's an array of these groups, and it's very difficult to keep track of them. But each one of them has their own particular characteristics. Jaish al-Islam has prided itself on a declaration by its founder that it is their duty to annihilate all Christians, all Alawites, all Shia Muslims, all Druze, and they are sworn to do this. Additionally, more visually, they are famous for taking hostages, and they put the women in steel cages, and they take them around to various places in the city where they think that there might be bombings taking place in response to their mortaring the suburbs of Damascus. These are not nice people, but they have finally been cornered, and they finally had decided that they would surrender Douma. Arrangements had been made to bus them out to areas that they wanted to go to. The buses had come. The buses had already evacuated a good number of them. Their severe casualties were evacuated. Many of their troops were evacuated. They were preparing to clear out and, in fact, had even set fire to their tanks, to their artillery pieces. They were burning ammunition, they were burning documents and things of that sort in preparation for the final evacuation. At that point, they had negotiations going on, and whoever runs Jaish al-Islam had a delegation of people who met with the Syrians and were working out final arrangements. And apparently the big kahuna for the Jaish al-Islam did not like what his negotiators were doing. And unlike what we do here in the Senate, where if we don't like what our conferees do, we appoint some new conferees, when his conferees came back, he had them all executed. And so... that's a cautionary note to some of you. But in any event, I know I've got some people worried at this point. But he did. He had three of them killed, three of his senior lieutenants, and then he asked for a temporary ceasefire so that they could work things out. And. It was at that point that this alleged poison gas attack occurred. Now, it is not entirely clear that there was an attack. There was a doctor from the hospital, the main hospital in Douma, who has said, "We haven't received any casualties. Nobody has been sent in." The reports of what happens, some of them said, well, people had dilated pupils and were foaming at the mouth. Others said, and there's a strong stench of chlorine. Well, I've heard a similar report in the past. Now, the problem is that sarin gas, which we, you know, this is the gas that we claim was the reason for going into Iraq. It's a colorless, odorless gas. If it was present in here, not one of us would have a hint of it. It doesn't smell like chlorine. Chlorine smells like chlorine. But anyway, they mixed it all together and they said, well, it smells like this, it looks like this, it has these symptoms. The United States has decided that regardless of whether there was an actual attack, and without regard to who may have staged it, we're going to attack Syria, and we've already got a cruiser offshore, and it's got cruise missiles. And so we are about to escalate our war in Syria. Now, I've got to tell you, we've been fighting a covert war, a semi-covert war in Syria for over 7 years. We're into the eighth year of it right now. And we have been funneling weapons. We've been funneling money to all kinds of terrorist groups. I think we've gotten beyond the point where we even talk about moderate terrorists. We say, well, they're all somewhat Al-Qaeda lookalikes. And you might recall in 2001, it was Al-Qaeda that attacked the Twin Towers and attacked the Pentagon and killed 3,000 Americans. Today, we are on the verge of attacking Syria, which has been resisting these terrorists for 8 years. Now, if we don't think this is long enough, let me tell you something. We have been at war. This country has been at war for 17 years over in that area. That is longer than the combined tally of the First World War, the Second World War, and the Vietnam War. When we fought the First World War, everybody said, this is the war to end all wars. The war to end all wars. And here we are. Nobody even talks about ending wars. Nobody even talks about achieving peace. And I wish the Democratic Party would be doing it, and I wish the Republican Party would do it. I don't blame either one more than the other. We don't have a peace party. Charlie Rangel, back when I was in the Pentagon, we were thinking about the all-volunteer force and going to it. I was a professional, and I wanted order and discipline, and I knew it would achieve that. But he said something that has haunted me all of these years. And Charlie Rangel said, we need to have the draft because, he said, it's the only way we have a feedback mechanism to tell people when we are doing things that are stupid. When we have the citizen soldier who goes over and he's sent to fight in stupid wars to do stupid things, the professional won't come back and tell you that, but the guy who's in for 2 years, he's a draftee, he'll come back and he'll lay it on the line and say, boy, this is dumb what we're doing. And it always haunted me because I wanted the professional army, and I knew that Charlie Rangel was right. And today we have no feedback mechanism, and we fight war after war after war. Now, President Trump was elected, and part of his promise was that we were going to do several things in foreign policy that included the fact that we were going to normalize relations with Russia. We were not going to try to topple the government of Syria. We were going to work with them. We were going to normalize. We were going to do that. He promised that we were going to diminish our support for NATO because the Cold War is over. And he promised an end to regime change, which has become a fundamental part of American policy. As you go in, you demonize somebody, you say we don't like something they're doing, the next thing you bomb them all to hell, and there is nothing left but a smoking crater. If you want the evidence, you look at Libya. They don't even have an identifiable government. We went in there and we destroyed them in 2011. And here today, you cannot identify a viable government that functions in the country of Libya, country that started off as the wealthiest, most stable, most prosperous, and most anti-terrorist country in North Africa. So here we are, and we're about to beat the war drums, and we're about to go, and we're going to bomb people. And we're going to say, oh, these are terrible people, but they're not terrible people. They're kids, they're like your kids and like my kids. And we're going to drop bombs, and we're going to blow off their arms and their legs. And I've walked through the hospitals, and I've seen these guys, and they're putting on a brave face, but just like our troops who go over endlessly to Afghanistan, they're struggling along on stumps where there used to be legs. They're missing arms. They're blinded. And we're going to do this, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to beat our chest. And usually the people who send us over there are people who would no more go and risk their lives than they would jump off a bridge. How many of these people? How many Dick Cheneys? What did Dick Cheney say? He said, I was too busy to go to Vietnam. All of these other people, I mean, Democrats and Republicans, I'm bipartisan on this. But most of the people who send us to war are people who have contempt for the people who go and fight the wars. I love the people who fight the wars, whether they're just or whether they're unjust. But I sat down and I remember I was so stunned when we went into Iraq that I thought this has got to be some sort of a political ploy. Because we're gonna upset the balance of power, and we're gonna unleash a horrific amount of violence if we take out Iraq and create a vacuum. And so I didn't say anything. And I thought, this must be something that George Bush is doing. And in the end, when he's finished, you know, at the last minute, there'll be some sort of a resolution of it, and he'll claim victory and so forth, and he didn't. And since then, Iraq, which never did one thing to us, which never had weapons of mass destruction, nothing, 1 million people have died. We started bombing Iraq 27 years ago. We have dropped a third of a million bombs. Now, this is as of a couple of years ago. We had dropped 1/3 of a million bombs on that country. For what? I cannot identify for you one thing that the American public has gotten out of all of these wars, except for the fact that we have managed to accumulate $7 trillion in national debt from it. Now, when President Obama was in office, the Republicans made great hay on the fact that our national debt had soared, had gone up to $20 trillion. But the one thing that we never did focus on is the fact that $7 trillion of those dollars were wasted bombing people and destroying homes and churches and farms in the Middle East. So, ladies and gentlemen, let me ask you this. They were within an estimated 48 hours of ending the war in Douma. The troops were being taken away. Things were being settled. The firing had stopped. What earthly explanation would President Assad have for firing poison gas? And if he were to fire poison gas, why wouldn't he fire it at enemy troops? I ask this over and over again. Every time one of these false flag attacks is rigged up, I say, okay, you've shown me people. Why isn't there any allegation that we're firing at troops? Why is it always people strolling baby carriages? Ladies and gentlemen, we are on the verge of escalating the war after 17 nonstop wars, or nonstop years of war. We need to get out. If the United States will simply get out of there, then I think things will be worked out. But instead, we continually work towards war. I so regret the fact that that our president has surrounded himself with a war cabinet. I'm a Trump supporter, but I tell you, I am so distraught with what has happened to our foreign policy establishment. I listened to our UN ambassador, and instead of talking like an ambassador, everything she says is shrill. It's war, war, war. Bomb this one, bomb that one. Leverage this one. We got to back off. I tell you, it is a time for peace. You know, Scripture says time for war and a time to beat the swords into plowshares. We are long past the time for the plowshares. And I sincerely hope that the president will have second thoughts about this. We are on the verge. We are literally nose to nose with the Russians. Now, we're vastly more powerful than they are. We spend 11 times their defense budget. But many of us are old enough to remember the time when we stood at the border between East and West Germany. We were nose to nose, but we were extraordinarily careful not to do something that would trigger the Third World War. Today, we are literally nose to nose, and we are bombing areas where we are killing Russian soldiers, and we risk triggering something that goes out of control, like it did in 1914, and we had a minor incident that triggered the First World War and led to the Second World War. We do not want this to happen, and I, ladies and gentlemen, it is my prayer, and I apologize for taking your time because none of you are to blame for any of this, but it is my prayer that we back off and we stop before we do something that goes too far and forces this nation into a nuclear conflagration with Russia. They may not be powerful conventionally relative to us, but they are roughly comparable to us in terms of nuclear power. And once this thing gets lit off, it doesn't stop. So, ladies and gentlemen, I hope that those of you who, and I'm sure there are many who disagree, but those of you who do agree, I hope that you too will pray as I do for peace and for us to draw back from the precipice. Mr. President, thank you. And again, my apologies for taking your time on a day when I know everyone wants to get back home. Thank you.